I'm Gab, he's Jules. Blue skies over West London. I can just see the Wembley Arch in the distance from our office. Jules, we have a packed show because the Champions League group stage is over. Almost over.
Almost.
Because Atalanta against Villarreal got postponed. But we have a packed show because we have some important verdicts. I think, though, there's one place to start. So I'm just going to go right into it. It's Barcelona. They lost to Bayern. Not really a surprise. But again, the manner very, very poor. And to help us dissect it, we're joined by Sam Marsden. Sam, did anybody actually believe they were going to go to Bayern and get it done? But they're all freaking out anyway, right?
No one believed that they were going to go to Bayern and get it done. I think there was hope that they wouldn't be turned over quite like they were in their last two meetings with Bayern. And there was even more hope that perhaps Dinamo Kiev could go to Benfica and maybe get a draw. I think that's where Barca fans were looking on Wednesday night. They were more hopeful in Kiev getting a result than in Barca getting a result. But yeah, I mean, the nature of the result. I mean, Xavi's only had five games as coach, so you couldn't expect wholesale changes or them to be a completely different side. But I think his arrival kind of gave them perhaps a slight fake belief that they would be able to at least compete. I mean, that's the word Xavi likes using. They have to compete. Even if they can't beat the top teams, you know, the top Bayern Munich, the Premier League sides, they need to be able to compete with them better.
All right. That's a good segment. That's a good segue, rather. And to my next point, because I'm going to lay my cards on the table. Xavi is one of those guys who's one of my heroes as a player. I really, really liked him. I really liked Roy Keane. Roy Keane, now, I don't like so much as a manager. Xavi, I really want to like as a manager, but I have to be honest. Guys, did he make, starting with you, Sam, did he really make a huge mistake at the weekend? When Betis are coming, he looks at Betis, he says, no Nabil Fekir, who's their best player. Pellegrini has lost here the last 10 times he was here. They haven't scored a goal here, or haven't kept a clean sheet here since 1994, when even before Xavi was playing, I think. And so he goes and he rests De Jong, Piqué, and Ousmane Dembélé, presumably for this game. It sounds to me like a weird miscalculation, because surely there's a greater chance, you know, you can qualify for the Champions League if you go and you beat Betis at home, right?
Yeah, I think there are some mitigating factors. I think the first one is Piqué even one of Barca's best defenders anymore? The second one is Xavi said after that game that they both had a slight knock. We don't know how much that was, and he didn't want to risk them ahead of the Bayern game, which read that as you will. And obviously with Ousmane Dembélé, there's the risk of, you know, injury and stuff. He's obviously been so affected by injuries during his time at Barcelona. His performing, starting against Bayern Munich, was actually the first game he started this season. So whether he was ready for more than half an hour against Betis is another thing. But yeah, he probably benefited from an hour ahead of that Bayern game, and perhaps it was a miscalculation. Yeah.
They're out of the Champions League for the first time since what, 2001, not making it to the knockout stages, which is huge financially, and we will talk about that later. But it's not on this Bayern game. We knew that they were never going to beat Bayern in the two games anyway. We knew that Benfica would probably do the same. So it was all going to be down to the Benfica games and the Dinamo Kiev games, which they won both. And then you go to Benfica when the Dutch guy was still there and get hammered 3-0. This is where you lost this qualification.
No, I'm not disputing but you still expect to see more of a performance to give you some hope and, you know, maybe a heroic defeat or something, right?
But where I slightly disagree with you is I think if you ask Xavi, would you rather win the Bayern game or the Betis game? He would go at the Bayern game every day, of course, because that means...
Right, but one is far more realistic than the other.
Well, yeah, of course. But Betis, you still have plenty of matches in the La Liga to come back and still finish top four. Bayern, if you lose that game, it's over. Then you have to play the Europa League. And you're not sure that you make the last 16 of Europa League, by the way, because now you have to play a playoff against a team that finished second in their group, which could be Lazio, for example, which could be PSV Eindhoven. And trust me, those teams would cause a lot of problems to this Barca team. So you could see why you try to do that.
Hey, Sam, there's obviously a massive air of negativity now. I'd like you to do a weird exercise and just tell me, give me reasons for Barca fans to be hopeful now.
No, there is reasons for them to be hopeful when you look at the young players that are coming through. The problem is they're so young. They've obviously got a new coach, a new president. I mean, a relatively new president. Laporta returned in March. We're yet to see.
Can I say something? Sorry, I'm going to be rude and interrupt and do the thing I get criticized for all the time. There is nothing new about Laporta. There is nothing new about that man.
It's a new stick.
No, whatever. But there's nothing new about him. Nothing innovative, nothing new. It's the same stuff as before. I just want to make that very clear.
I see where you're coming from, Sam.
That's what I was going to say. We're yet to see whether, obviously, there's kind of a breath of fresh air around the club that it's no longer Bartomeu, that Laporta is back, that Xavi is back as coach. But there's also an unknown, like you say, there's nothing new about Laporta. He's been here and he's done it. We're yet to see whether what he does will translate and have a positive effect this time. And obviously, Xavi is an unknown as well. But he's brought excitement. He has sort of, the mood has lifted a little bit until the defeats this week to Betis and Bayern. And then there's talented young players coming through. They didn't have Ansu Fati or Pedri available against Bayern Munich. They're both obviously two of the best young players in the world. You know, Gavi's broken through the season. They have got young players. Ronald Araujo has perhaps been the shining light this season in terms of his performances. He's perhaps one player who looks like he can compete physically and technically with the best teams in the world. So there are young players coming through, and there's perhaps a feeling that if not right now, it's the start of something, that this defeat, you know, that if the 8-2 to Bayern in 2020 signaled the end, or should have signaled the end of, you know, the era of, you know, the PKs, you know, the players like that, Luis Suarez, Vidal, Rakitic, then perhaps this defeat now signals the start of something as they start to bring through these young players.
Sam, when do we expect Ansu Fati and Pedri to come back?
Ansu Fati is very, very close to coming back. He's been training before the Bayern Munich game. It just came a little bit too soon. There's no need to rush him now. They'd probably sort of maybe wait a couple of weeks more rather than rush him back now that they're out of the Champions League, and they've obviously just got a couple of, in theory, winnable league games coming up, as well as a glamour friendly in Saudi Arabia against Boca Juniors next week. Pedri is not going to be back until the new year either. So it's going to be January, really, before they're both back up and running with the team.
Okay, so when they do come back, I'm trying to imagine, and you can help me out, a Barca side where everybody's fit. And we're just going to assess this, because I think the big issue is, can they reach top four domestically, or are they better off putting a lot of their eggs in the Europa League basket? And when I look at this, I was a big Ter Stegen fan. I think Ter Stegen has, a bit like All Black this year, they're not having great seasons.
He closed his eyes on that Sané shot.
And I don't think Ter Stegen was great last year either, for what it's worth. But whatever, he is what you have. But right back, I'm assuming enough of the Sergino Dest at right wing, that was needs must, but he'll go back to playing as an attacking right back. In the middle, I always stay up and watch 3 hours of El Chiringuito using my illegal VPN before I go to bed. And they had this weirdo on who's crying, was upset that Lenglet was laughing after the game, and said that he needs to walk all the way back to the Camp Nou, and then they're going to fire him and burn him at the stake.
Yeah, probably kill him, yeah.
So I'm assuming your center backs are Araujo and Piqué the rest of the way? Is this, when everybody's fit, your sort of ideal 11? Is this what he's going to do? Or
it's literally at the point now where it's just that Alco and plus one, either PK, Eric Garcia or Lenglet.
Yeah, I don't need to see too much more of Eric Garcia either while we're at it. Left back, I know Jordi Alba came off. Why did they risk him even?
Did you have to risk him? I guess probably you did have to risk him.
But Jordi,
I guess when you see what happened when Alba went off versus when Alba was on and Mingueza coming on his place, then you see why they risked him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, true. So that's a great, very good point.
Jordi Alba, then midfield, I think we might see a little bit of depth, because I know people are all over Nico, but for now, and I know you're not big on Busquets, but for now, Busquets, I think, remains a better option than Nico, right?
I'm not sure. I would play De Jong.
I'd play De Jong too, but you need three midfielders.
No, but I'd play De Jong as the deeper one, and then Pedri and Gavi, and that's your midfield three. I would not have Busquets anymore. Maybe in some big game, depending on how you want to approach it. But I'm sorry, I love the guy, and he's a legend, and he's a genius in his own position, the way he's played it for all those years, and the intelligence and football IQ, no problem. I'm not being critical of Busquets' legacy.
Right.
I'm just saying that right now, this is a team that needs something different.
Based on what Jules is saying, I kind of agree with you. And Sam, tell us if we're wrong. But De Jong in that deeper midfield position, playing it maybe a little bit like early Pep Barcelona, where he becomes almost a third central defender, that would help out the two stiffs at the back, or one stiff and Araujo. And then obviously it's going to be more attacking if you have Pedri and Gavi as the other two options. But that's not entirely bad. And maybe when one of them's unavailable, maybe you can even, you know, you can drop in Coutinho. You can, if you need more muscle, you can drop in Busquets or
yeah,
Nico.
Completely.
That's not terrible, is it, Sam?
No, I like it. I think De Jong is someone who has suffered a lot at Barcelona in these last 2-3 years because of the environment, because of the situation the club are in. And he's just been shifted around so often. I think he needs some stability in his position. And I think when he first came to Barcelona, he was viewed as someone who would eventually take that Busquets role. Obviously, at Ajax, he played in a two, but he was, you know, getting the ball much deeper. At Barca, we've often seen him under Koeman and even under Xavi now sort of being demanded to get forward, get into the box. And for me, I think he would be best at the base of that midfield. And you've got the players to play ahead of him now with Pedri and Gavi and Nico.
Okay, so now, so if we do that, then we get to the front three. And on paper, it's Ansu and Dembele wide, and it's Memphis through the middle.
Yeah.
The problem here is Dembele is obviously made of glass. Ansu is still very young and picks up injuries. It's had horrible injury situation. I would say getting a wide player who can go and play and stay wide, because I think that's what Xavi wants from his wingers, should be the priority. And maybe that's why we're seeing this rotating cast of La Masia guys come in.
Yeah,
or Demir, or whatever.
Or maybe the idea is you need a proper centre forward. Now that Aguero is...
That's the other issue I was going to get to.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, does it make sense to have your wingers so wide when you don't have a real centre forward? Earlier in the season, Sam, when Memphis was on fire, it didn't really matter where you put him because he would score and he'd create out of nothing and whatever. But the dude is not a traditional centre forward. Does it make sense to revisit that and maybe come up with a different way of playing? Does it make sense even... Okay, I know we all make fun of Luke de Jong, but at least he's...
Please. Right. Talk to me about Ferran Torres if you want your baby, your chouchou, and go and spend 40 million on him or whatever he's going to cost them.
They can't spend anything. They don't have any money.
I know, but they seem really keen on him, so go and get him. Go and get Cabral at Basel or whoever you want. But please, not Luke de Jong.
All right, Sam, help me out here. If Memphis is my best, most reliable, productive player, or one of them on this team right now, until Ansu Fati becomes what we think he's going to be, should I not be putting him in a position where he can be most effective? Whether that's out wide and maybe bring the wingers narrower, whether it's maybe ditching the 4-3-3, maybe for a 4-3-2-1 or something like that, where he can get the ball in half spaces. Mm. And if that happens, if you need somebody to play off, is, for lack of a word, some big lump like De Jong, or maybe Braithwaite if he ever comes back from injury, could those be options? Or is that just off the table as far as Xavi's concerned?
Braithwaite could be an option when he comes back as sort of a short-term option more than anything, as opposed to a long-term. Luke de Jong is completely off the table, really, more than anything, just because he's kind of become the symbol of the dying days of the Koeman era, you know, signed in a hurry after they let Griezmann go. And he became like this idea of, you know, that even if it's not true, there are perfectly good examples of Barca needing a number nine or a bigger number nine. But he's become this example of, you know, the exact way Barca don't want to play, you know, the crosses and whatnot. So, no, I don't think there's any way back for Luke de Jong here. And I'd be surprised if he remains at the club beyond January. They've been sort of looked into already how they could move him on, or if he could return to Sevilla, or what options he could have. So Luke de Jong's not going to be an option, save sort of another spate of injuries. The Memphis situation is interesting, though, like you say, because I think the problem Barca have is him and Ansu, even if they play with one as a nine and one as a left, they're almost both sort of inside left players. They're neither wingers nor number nines. So there's a problem there with fitting them both into the same team. Obviously, Dembele offers natural width, and him and Ansu would be sort of regulars if they were fit and playing well. But there's a real quandary with Memphis about whether he really fits the way Xavi wants to play as a nine or as a winger, because he doesn't hog the touchline. And as a nine, he loses the ball a lot. He's been really frustrating under Xavi, just not on the same wavelength perhaps as some of the midfielders he sometimes, whether it's just through poor touches or making the wrong decisions. He's had a tough few weeks under Xavi. So yeah, there's a bit of a quandary with Memphis. And that attack, like you say, it's hard to plan because you just don't know whether Dembele or Ansu are going to be fit. So you don't know whether you need a winger or a nine. But I mean, two goals in six Champions League games. They've scored less goals than Lewandowski in all competitions this season. It's obvious they need to do something to get that attack firing.
Mm. All right, when we talk about doing something, obviously, we've touched upon the personnel. We've touched upon the tactics. Jules, can I refer you to Dr. Thomas Muller's diagnosis here? Who said something, and I'm paraphrasing here, Thomas. I'm not as precise as you are. I'm not German. But he basically said, well, they have some really talented players, but it's about intensity. They couldn't cope with our intensity. Yeah. I'm a bit wary to bring this up because obviously modern football, a lot of it is about pressing and possession. Most teams play that way. And Bayern seem to do that especially well. They're physically very good at it. They've been doing it for many years.
With that intensity.
You know, Xavi comes from a place which, you know, last 3 years he was coaching in Qatar, where I don't know that even you can play a pressing game there most of the year because it's kind of hot and maybe it's not entirely his DNA, this kind of pressing. Is this a thing, or Jules, do you think he can work with him? I want to hear from both of you. Jules first. Do you think he can work on this on the training pitch? Is this something that you can introduce, or are you better off saying, you know what, we don't really have the players for this. Let's focus instead on, if we get pressed, we'll just play our way through the press. We'll mix in, you know, long balls for fast players when we do it. Otherwise, we've got all these guys who've been doing their rondas and they can do that.
Yeah.
And we'll play through the press.
No. Yeah. Which is one thing. I think you don't have to go full intensity, you know, Liverpool or Bayern or even City. But you need a bit more than what they've been showing under the Dutch guy, that's for sure. But even since Xavi took over, and we go back to Busquets. Busquets cannot play anymore in those super high quality games because he can't run anymore. He can't press. I don't think he can do that enough now. That's why you need.
He still pass a little.
He can pass, but we're talking about intensity. Yeah, I think what Müller means is more like when you don't have the ball and what you can do. And it was far too easy for Bayern in that game on Wednesday night, for example. And that's why I think that's what Xavi has to think. With the ball, of course, they can play. They can be anyone's press. They can pass the ball also good. The movement, the intelligence, all of that. I think a lot of them have that. And that for me, a lot of his work now will have to be on that intensity level. You play Osasuna at the weekend, and you have to go there and have that intensity. Otherwise, you're not going to win games against Betis. I think that was missing too.
See, Sam, on the back, what's your take on this? Because I think I'm bored with Jules says against Osasuna, team that I think defend very well. And obviously, you're going to have these situations. Are you better off trying to acquire that intensity and running more? Because it's not a zero-sum game, but it almost is. Because Xavi doesn't have that much time to work. Mm. And these are the players he has. Or are you better off trying to be better at beating the press? And if it means that when you lose the ball, you know, you defend deeper, fine, so be it. I don't have to win the ball up the pitch. I'll defend it. I'll win it deeper. And I'm going to play through you and create chances that way. And I'm going to have long spells of possession where I rest and I make you chase me around. Well, what would you do if Xavi came to you and said, hombre, yeah, what are we going to do
for,
here?
He's coming for coffee tonight.
Yeah.
And ask for advice.
Yeah, long term, the idea that what they have to do is they have to recover that intensity. Like Thomas Muller said, I think if you look at all of the best teams in Europe, Liverpool, Chelsea, Manchester City, Bayern Munich, they play with that intensity, and Barca aren't going to go anywhere without that. It's a bit of a buzzword, I guess, intensity at the moment. It's not too tangible, is it? Like you say, it's to do with pressing, and obviously you need the players to be able to do that. But the overall idea at Barca is that intensity has been lost sort of since 2015, if you will, maybe more quickly over the last couple of years, just A, through having an aging squad, but B, through bad habits creeping in, which have, you know, through winning, and they carried on winning, and these habits didn't affect them too much perhaps in 16, 17, but then by 18, 19 we saw them really struggling in the big game. So it's something that's going to take a long time to bring in, which is why Xavi has also looked at other alternatives in the short term after the win at Villarreal last weekend. They did start playing long, and two of their goals at the end came from Ter Stegen playing long balls down the pitch. And Xavi was quite keen to say after the game that was something they'd also been working on, because obviously, like you say, they don't have the personnel to press, especially not for 90 minutes. If you watch those first two Barca games against Espanyol and Benfica under Xavi, they were very good pressing for 45 minutes. Nico, Gavi, Pedri, when he comes back as well, have all demonstrated that they can sort of press high and win the ball back. Nico's particularly impressed me in that, because I've not always been sold on him this season, but he's been good in that sense under Xavi. So it's something that long term, that has to be the plan. But obviously, short term, how do they solve these problems?
I want to open up another subject here, which is La Masia. When we see clubs, especially big clubs that have a history of young players, when they struggle, the easiest thing to do is promote kids from the youth academy, because they're going to get instantly applauded by the fans. You're going to get applauded for playing them. Mm. You know, if you lose, at least you paid the kids. Blah blah blah. We're building for the future and so on. I don't want to be a downer about La Masia, but there. If you guys remember, Sam, you're probably too young for this, but Jules, I know you're not. 10 years ago, yeah, when Barcelona were winning everything, right, and they had all those guys from La Masia in there, all these people going on about, oh, La Masia, they teach football the right way. Look, they create superstars and all this jazz. And then you look more closely and you say, yeah, okay, but then, you know, do they create the superstars or do they go and sign the best players? And, you know, Iniesta from Albacete and Messi from Argentina. And does Pedrito come when he's, you know, 17 years old from Tenerife? And Busquets comes at 18. And then if we count Cesc Fabregas as part of that group, then we shouldn't really be counting Gerard Pique as part of that
even
group.
Even Ansu.
And the other way around, right? Mm. Right. Educate me. Where did Ansu come from? Was he?
Isn't he south of Spain boy, Sam? Isn't he from Sevilla or something?
Gavi and Ansu Fati both came from Sevilla. Yeah, came from the south of Spain.
So
yeah,
when you looked at it, kind of other than Xavi, who kind of, you know, I think he joined La Masia probably the day it opened. He was like 8 years old. You know, most of these guys actually didn't grow up in La Masia. Right?
What do you mean? Grow up if you're 11 when you join or 12. You don't have to join at 3 years old.
But what I'm saying is a lot of these people actually came in when they were 16 or 17. Right? And you can say La Masia was like a finishing school for them. But, you know, when you spend 1 year in La Masia because you're the best player in the Canary Islands, like Pedro was, maybe it's, you can't really say you were that formed by La Masia.
Pedro is not from La Masia,
but,
for sure.
Not Pedro. I was just saying Pedro back in the day.
Sorry.
Right?
So
I'm just wondering, by pushing all these youngsters in there, is he kind of fueling this notion? Because the reality of La Masia is that between Busquets and Ansu Fati, unless I'm forgetting somebody, the best player that came out of La Masia and actually stayed and contributed to Barcelona was Sergi Roberto. And I know Jules not a big fan.
No,
they've had guys who've been successful elsewhere, like Icardi, like Adama Traore, but these guys aren't exactly pulling up trees, are they? I mean, would Adama Traore and Icardi help this Barcelona team? Yeah, right now, yeah. But would they have helped Barcelona a couple years ago? Probably not. So what's your take on this, Sam? Do we tend to overrate this? Is he guilty of pushing this romantic notion, or does he just not have any choice?
No, it's definitely true what you say. There's this romantic notion of La Masia, and there's very good PR around it, when the reality, if we break it down, you know, there are a lot of good academies at top clubs at the moment. If you look at the players in the last sort of 10 years that Madrid have produced and even sold at profit that have come through La Fabrica, it's probably been better than La Masia over the last 10 years. It's also true, though, that Barca lost their way a little bit. And you talk about players like Adama and Icardi. I guess Thiago is someone who left in different circumstances. There have been players coming through who have played with the first team but have gone on to play elsewhere. Guys like, you know, I don't know, Mark Bartra as well, and people like that haven't quite cracked it at the club, who perhaps Barca lost their way in the sense that rather than having these players in the squad, they would go out and they would sign an Andre Gomez or a Paco Alcacer, when perhaps they would have been fine giving more minutes to the players that they had coming through. And now they've reached this point of desperation where, it is a little bit desperate the way they want to now sell it again, even though there is a very, very talented group of players coming through.
I mean, Carles Alenia, you know, Teo, all those guys. But it cycles, Gab. So Chelsea won't always have a generation like they have now with Reece James and Chalobah and Mount and Tammy Abraham and all those players. It's like United with that 92, you know, the class of 92. This is all, I think this is what happened, Masia or not La Masia. But
I guess my concern is, at some point, you have to be sure. And I'm all for playing the kids in the situation. And if you have to sell the narrative and you're Xavi, go for it. But the point is, should things go badly, you have to be sure about the kid, because kids, people can really be burned by this psychologically.
Yeah, of
course. I mean, Ricky Puig, I think, is an example. He's still there. Maybe he's a reclamation project or whatever.
He's good on Instagram, though.
But he's really good on Insta. But so you just have to be careful that, you know, to try to get a little help in the present, you're not hurting the future, because that's happened before, too. On the financial side, obviously, we know there's a ton of debt. I don't want to turn this into a boring accounting show, but, you know, they're going to either make money from qualifying for the Champions League for next season or make money in the Europa League all the way in the final. That's another path to qualifying.
Yeah.
Jules, I just want to give a quick whip round here about who thinks the better shot is going to be by the league or by the Europa League. Jules?
Europa League every single day. They will have to go through a playoff now to reach the last 16 and play a team that finished second in their group in the Europa League already, which could be a tough draw if it's a team like Lazio, for example, or, you know, those kind of calibers. Could be easier. And then after that, you've got your two games in the last 16, two quarterfinals, two semifinals, one final. It's easier path than La Liga, where they're 6 points behind Atletico Madrid in fourth with Betis and Sevilla ahead of them. And yeah, those two, the two Sevilla teams might crumble and not finish top four or whatever. And there's Real Sociedad in there. I'm worried about this Barca team. Almost halfway through the season, they play Osasuna and Elche. But after that, it's a bit tougher.
I'm going to disagree. I'm going to say it's far more likely they get through via the league because they still have a better squad and there's more things you can
control. What's wrong with the Europa League? What don't you think? They can win it?
No. It's a knockout competition. It's a knockout competition. And so anything can go wrong. And I do think that they're going to play better teams in the Europa League than they will between now and the end of the season. But there's a good chance that that'll happen. But Sam, you get the deciding vote here.
Simon, you know who says the truth here.
No, I'm sorry, Jules, but I'm convinced what? Coming in the top four. Top four is much more realistic than
there
Barca
you go,
the
Visca Barca.
So you're not worried about their league form? You think that, I mean, even Osasuna at the weekend, I'm like, this is going to be tricky. This is
every
be
away game. Every away game is going to be tricky, and yeah, I'm completely worried about Barca's league form. But I still think that they're much more likely to finish in the top four than to win the Europa League. If, like you said before, they scored two goals in the Champions League. They just about beat Dynamo Kiev. They couldn't beat Benfica. So, you know, the Europa League's going to have some tough games for them. Dortmund are dropping in there. Sevilla are a specialist
in
there.
If you're mid-table in April and you're in the quarterfinals Europa League, then obviously you reevaluate. But for now, six points, a lot of games to go. Sam, I'm going to leave you with this, which is I haven't had your view on this. I've heard so many conflicting views, and a lot of them are nonsense. I want to take go back to the summer because it is messy, and Messi does traffic. Here we go. Can you explain? You're there in Barcelona, and I'm hoping things have started to trickle out. Has anybody offered a coherent explanation that actually stands up to scrutiny and not citing weird laws that don't actually exist about how it's possible? Lionel Messi wants to stay at Barcelona, and he starts crying when he has to leave. But then he's told that they can't afford him and Mr. Tebas and all this other stuff. But then they can go and sign Sergio Aguero, who, of course, is a guy they've lost in between. I don't understand how this works because Messi was going to take a pay cut and whatever else. And can you just run us through the best logical explanation that you've been told when you asked Barcelona that question?
Yeah, I mean, the best and most logical explanation, and, you know, it's not 100%, but what comes from the club is obviously this whole CVC deal was key. Barca had, you know, sort of in principle agreed to this CVC deal with an investment company with La Liga, which the other clubs apart from Barca and Madrid have now signed up for, which would have seen them give the money. That would have eventually have, in theory, given them the money to be able to renew Lionel Messi's contract is what the word is. And then obviously they pulled out of that with, you know, Real Madrid when it became a sort of Barca and Madrid v La Liga thing. And that meant that they didn't have that money coming in and they would have a smaller salary cap, their spending cap this year is just 97 million. And if you think Messi's wage before bonuses, 60, 70 million a year.
But we were all told that Messi leaving wasn't about money, right? That Messi would have happily taken a lot less money and whatever else. And that, you know, they take whatever. No, and forget playing for free because that's an extreme case. But Sergio Aguero signed a really big deal because he was in a lot of money at City. Couldn't they just have given the Aguero money to Messi?
They signed that before Messi left and when Messi didn't have a contract. What happened with Messi was, I mean, the 50% pay cut was a little bit of a dark herring because it was, you know, over sort of a few years as opposed to just 2 years. So it was kind of like spread out rather than that. Messi's stance is that's all they offered him. They didn't ask him to take any more of a cut. So there's been a bit of a squabble there between him and Laporta in terms of that. And then obviously,
who's telling
the
truth
was,
here? Who would you trust more? Not to put you on the spot here. Because honestly, Messi says he wasn't offered the opportunity to take less money, which I buy to some degree because, I mean, look, I know you're a professional footballer and not an accountant, but you can read the newspapers too. You say, oh, they don't have the money to sign me. I really want to stay to the point that I start crying. Hey, guys, can I sign for less money? Is this really the problem?
But surely that
On the other hand, on the other side, you have Laporta, and I don't know how much you believe what he says.
No, but surely at some point, Messi said, okay, just tell me how much the maximum you can give
that's
me.
That's the thing.
And surely if you're Laporta, you say, listen, Leo, you earn 60, 70
gross. Did that ever happen?
It must have. And said,
let's ask Sam.
The maximum I can give you is 10. Take it or leave it. But clearly...
Messi said no.
But look, I'm not sure that happened.
Well, that's the fix. This really bugs me. And it should bug Barcelona fans. Sorry, Sam, explain. Educate.
Yeah, as far as we know, that didn't happen. The contract was agreed, you know, with, you know, roughly 50% cut. And then it didn't happen. And there were no further talks. And the reason being, you know, Messi needed time to sort his future. And just to add the Aguero thing, obviously, that didn't get sorted until the final days of the transfer window when other players took play cuts. You know, Messi could have technically waited and maybe, you know, Griezmann. I mean, the club said it wouldn't have made a difference, but Griezmann going and the pay cuts, maybe not. They would have been able to afford to register him on a smaller deal. But Messi didn't want to wait until the end of August because there was also the risk that Memphis and Aguero would not be able to be registered.
Well, the risk of not registering Aguero, hindsight being not really a big deal if Messi sticks around. But I don't know. Thank you for that. I just hope. Because I know at Barcelona, with their system, there's people who are constantly filing lawsuits and trying to find out the truth from the club, you know, club members and club officials. I really hope there's a full inquest and we find out the truth. Because it's very obvious to me that one or both of these parties aren't being 100% transparent with what happened.
Yeah, that's fair. That is fair.
So, Sam, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Barca. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Chelsea miss out on first place after a 94th-minute strike from Zenit midfielder Magomed Ozdoev condemns them to a 3-3 draw. Jules, Thomas Tuchel made a bunch of changes with an eye on the Premier League. Did he get this wrong?
Yes and no. Of course, you want them to finish top. Although I'm not really sure what it means now to finish top or second, and you still have to beat the best if you want to win the Champions League. So I'm not too sure. It's more on the back of the West Ham defeat, where I think to get the confidence back and the momentum going again, put on a good performance at Zenit, was important. And the fact that you make a lot of changes, you expose yourself of not having that and not bouncing back the way maybe you want it. Had they put their first team, they might have won 4-0, and then we would not be talking about West Ham or not winning two games in a row, which we do now. So, I don't know, but also understand the fact that physically he felt they had to rotate. Yeah. I love Reece James in midfield, I have to be honest. I tweeted about it. You and I think that his
future...
What
about... Who was it? Who's the Muppet who said, oh, Reece James can't play centre-back? He can play whatever... He can do whatever he likes.
No. There's a difference between playing him as centre-back. He's far better in midfield or as right wing-back or right-back than as centre-back. I'm just saying. But we see with the draw. For all we know, they might still get a good draw, even finishing second, like drawing Lille, for example.
Lille is basically the only good draw they can get out of the four.
Yeah.
I don't want to be playing Ajax. They're probably better than Ajax. But still, you don't want to be facing that.
Yeah, Lille is the one.
And then the other two are Bayern and Real Madrid. Those are bad draws.
Yeah, they are bad draws.
Six of one, one half dozen another.
Yeah, exactly. Juventus... obviously finished then top in the Chelsea group because Moise Kean's goals see them beat Malmö 1-0. Some relief for Max Allegri, Gab, and Juventus fans after the recent bad news.
Yeah, this is good news. You top your group. That's a big deal. After everything that they've had on the pitch and off the pitch, this is big. And by the way, Bernardeschi's cross outside of the boot.
Christ mask.
I gotta say, Bernardeschi, sometimes you really, really surprise us. Atletico Madrid pull off a 3-1 win away to Porto to qualify in second place. Jules, this is a wild game. This was a old school Cholo throwback. But I mean, Stevie Nicholl said this was a throwback to the 1980s.
Yeah.
And he would know. He played in a lot of big European games in the 1980s.
It was a fight in all sense of the word. Fight on the pitch because we had two red cards with Carrasco. It all kicked off in that second half. You can feel the tension through the whole game. To be fair, Porto, maybe the better team in the whole 90 minutes if you take the game as a whole, and yet Atleti so efficient on that Griezmann first goal that really kills the mood.
It's about Cunha on Wendell. Come on, man.
What would you mean?
Getting him sent off like that.
I know, but he's still...
And VAR. I'm sorry, if you're shielding the ball and the guy runs into you...
I know.
At such slow pace.
It's a French referee, though, so I didn't want Turpin to get into trouble, but yeah.
Turpin, like, I think you could substitute the P for a D based on his performance.
What he was saying was, you could read on his lips, out, out, out. He could not control anyone. It was a joke. Atletico's win meant that the game didn't matter in the end. But Gab, were you disappointed by Milan's performance against Liverpool? Or was it a case of Liverpool, even with just three regulars really in the starting line, being just too good for Milan?
Yeah, when those three regulars are Alisson, who had a huge save late against Kessie, Mane and Salah, who are... pretty good. Can we agree?
Yeah, and involved in all the goals, pretty much.
You know, obviously, it's an issue of motivation. Very disappointing for Milan. They also had a bunch of players out. They had eight players out. Let's not forget. Yeah. And the players they did have really were unsuited to this, right? What you want to do against Liverpool, you obviously have to play through their press, and sometimes you mix it up with long balls. Well, if you have Zlatan up front, you don't really want him running into space.
No.
So, it was a big win for Liverpool. What I disagreed with, and I went ahead and had a little rant on the show, is, it's an embarrassment for City. No, it's an embarrassment for Milan's performance on the night they were bad. Let's stop with this whole big reflections of leagues, because it's just stupid. Sticking with Liverpool, though, Jules, I've been campaigning for this all season long.
I knew this was coming.
Evidently, somebody's been listening. Reports suggest Gini Wijnaldum would be open to a move back to the Premier League. Maybe Anthony. I want to make this clear. I've been campaigning for this. I haven't been reporting on it, but I did look and said he started just seven league games in Ligue 1 this season.
He was great in the Champions League.
It would be cool if he came back.
Certainly right now.
And we're talking alone. We're talking six months. Yeah,
PSG is saying that they don't want to let him go. They don't have that kind of profile. Okay, he might not be super happy, and he might want to play more, etc. Although he's been really useful in Europe, and he's finally finding his feet in the way he wants to play. Poch wants him to play, how he can play with Mbappe and Messi, and making those runs and all of that. So I don't think PSG right now, unless he forces a move and really wants to go, I don't think they would move him.
Jules. If everybody's fit, and I know that's obviously we still have, you know, Neymar's injured, and then obviously it's his sister's birthday to come and whatever else. So if they all three guys are fit and he decides to be attacking and play Di Maria for whatever reason, Wijnaldum's not getting into that starting 11.
But there's more games where he's only going to play the front three and no Di Maria. So then you'll have Gay, Verratti, and Wijnaldum.
Yeah, I am. Okay, good. Verratti, so good. So he can play against Clermont Foot. Okay,
yeah, exactly.
And Brest, and other body
parts.
You
keep dreaming about Gini coming back, you know, Gini in the bottle.
I think Liverpool fans don't want him.
Yeah. Back to Chelsea, is it weird to you, Gab, that they have four central defenders, Christensen, Azpilicueta, Rudiger, and Thiago Silva, all out of contract this summer? Surely this is not a good situation for Marina Granovskaya and the club.
I want to be consistent because obviously we've... you know, questioned and criticized other clubs when they've had a lot of guys with contract expiring. That said, you know, realistically, Thiago Silva was a two-year thing. He's good. He's very old. If he wants to stay another year, it's not a problem. Yeah. But, you know, I think you sort that out easily.
Yeah, that's year by year. Yeah.
Rudiger is another one. But again, he's somebody. This will probably be his last big contract. And, you know, you put a value on him. Christensen, obviously, they want to extend.
Yeah.
The interesting one is Azpilicueta. Again, not getting any younger. I have less of an issue with this in this situation because clearly either this year or next year, they're going to have to stiffen up that defense and bring in younger players. Jules, before we go, obviously we spent so much time talking Barcelona, we didn't talk much about Bayern.
No, true.
But we had Alfonso Davies starring for Bayern, yeah. And we have a new show. We have a little spin-off called Gab and Jules Meets.
That's right.
And our first one is out.
Yeah.
And we spoke to Victor Montagnani, who is the vice president of FIFA, yeah, and the president of CONCACAF.
Who's Canadian.
Canadian, the grandson of a Michelin-starred chef as well. He had a lot of pretty neat stories. And
yeah,
neat things
great
to say.
Stories of his own life, of course, of Alfonso Davies, Canadian football, but also what he thinks of the Super League, what he's trying to build within CONCACAF, which is a confederation with loads of different
and within
vibes.
FIFA, because as we've been saying, there's big changes ahead.
Yeah, definitely. So give it a listen. It's really worth it. It's really great chat.
And of course, Jules, they can download it wherever they get their Gab and Jules podcast. Welcome back, audience friends. More quick hits. Paris Saint-Germain beat up Bruges as Lionel Messi and Kylian Mbappe bagged 2 goals each. Jules, it's remarkable and probably surely just a coincidence how this team transformed themselves when that UCL music plays.
Well, it hasn't always been the case. Remember the defeat at City, for example, or even the draw at Bruges in the first game. But yeah, they were good, especially in the first half hour, let's say. Scored 2 goals in the first 7 minutes, the second one from Mbappe. Absolute beauty, and we saw a bit of progress. I've been very critical of them. There was a bit of progress. Bruges are a good team, but PSG were too good for them. 2 goals by Mbappe, 2 goals by Messi in that same group, Gab. City lose to Leipzig 2-1 in Germany. Guardiola played Fernandinho, Ake, Zinchenko, and Zach Steffen as well. Loads of changes, but otherwise, it was the regulars. Is this significant for you? And how angry should Pep be about Kyle Walker's stupid sending off for like basically kicking
so
the back
unnecessary
of
at
crazy
the end.
At that level,
I don't know if it was red mist or whatever. Now he's obviously going to be suspended for the round of 16. May not matter. Maybe it should. You know, people say, "Oh well, but they were already through." Okay, fine. But you play your regulars for a reason, and this is significant. De Bruyne was out there. Seven of the 11 was a starting team, right? So I think Pep's going to be extremely annoyed by this performance, but. Kudos to Leipzig. They obviously want to impress their new manager.
Yeah.
And, you know, though it's not quite official yet, it appears certain that Leipzig will appoint Domenico Tedesco to replace Jesse Marsh. Fabrizio Romano reporting that he was third choice after Roger Schmidt and Ruben Amorim. I don't fully buy this because those guys are in employment. But anyway, are you surprised?
I am a bit, only in the style of football that we saw. Schalke with Tedesco was the manager there. Obviously, they had one amazing season. Remember where everything was going their way, but it was still quite defensive. I don't think it's a criticism. It's just the way they played was much of their game was around that. Not so much the sort of progressive, high intensity, high press kind of football. That
more progressive at Spartak, and he did a good job there.
Yeah, but still, I'm still a bit surprised. I understand. Roger Schmidt, but he didn't want to leave PSV. Amorim didn't want to leave Sporting. You can understand why. Tedesco, I'm just
36 years old.
You know, young, and he's obviously.
I'm sure he knows more than one way to play football.
I'm sure, but let's see if he can adapt and how long it takes him.
Italian roots, but what I always find hilarious is Tedesco literally means German.
Yeah, exactly. Real Madrid beat Inter 2-0 at the Bernabeu to win their group, Gab. 9 wins in a row now for Carlo Ancelotti and his boys. Do you think people are overlooking them a little bit? I mean, we give them a lot of love. And how much should Inter be blaming themselves, really, for the result of the defeat? They played well.
Yeah. Inter, I thought, played really well. Yeah, obviously, really affected by Barella's red card. Stupid red card. He's been
Walker,
fined.
Yeah, similar thing.
Yeah. Worse in some ways because there was more at stake here.
Yeah, yeah. I
think people are sleeping on Real Madrid. I'm shocked, right? We live in the UK, and it seems that it's definitely going to be a Premier League club, maybe Bayern. Everybody else is rubbish, right? Real Madrid, they're way clear at the top, which means they can rest, they can focus on the Champions League.
Yeah.
They've won it loads of times as a club. He's won it loads of times as a manager and
a
as a player. I wouldn't sleep on Real Madrid at all.
And Cruz and Modric, especially in that Inter game, were
exactly
magnificent.
Exactly. Time to celebrate the guy who is my group stage MVP, Sebastian Haller. His goal in Ajax's 4-2 win over Sporting means he scored in all 6 group games. He's only the second person to achieve this after some no-name named Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah.
And he scored more goals in the Champions League this season than in the Eredivisie. Now, this offers definitive statistical proof that the Dutch league is much tougher.
Yeah. Benfica, maybe you're right. What an incredible group stage campaign, really. From Ajax, for the first time ever, they win their sixth game to start with. Pretty good. And then for Alaa himself, scoring in every single one of them, 10 in 6. Really clinical, really efficient. The way they played was fantastic. Again, I would not want to draw them on Monday. That's
I love this story. He was huge. We've been tracking him through an agent that I know. I think he was at Auxerre and then
he
went to Utrecht.
Was, yeah.
And they sent him on loan to Utrecht. I'm kind of like, did you not notice that this guy was good?
No, we were. It's just that, funnily enough, you said that quickly, his agent at the time, a French guy called Martel, who's not his agent anymore, used to be an Utrecht legend. French guy who went to Utrecht in the Eredivisie and did really well for them, an average player. And I think he saw the right path of taking Alaire there to keep his development going, the improvement, and then the idea was to go to a bigger club, which they did, and I think, apart from maybe the West Ham stint, it's worked pretty well for them. From one big young striker to another one, Dortmund are going into the Europa League. We knew that gap even before match day 6. But they do it on a high, and Erling Haaland bagging 2 goals in the 5-0 win against Besiktas after coming on the bench, and 2 headers as well. He never scored on headers.
I know. He's adding that dimension to his arsenal. How about that? I thought this was important. It's important to get a resounding win, build confidence, let the guy get goals after what happened at the weekend against Bayern. I think this is going to serve them in good stead in the Bundesliga. I tell you, Bundesliga race far from over. I don't care. It's 4 points.
Yeah, maybe.
Speaking of Dortmund, Jude Bellingham has been fined 40,000 euros for his comments about referee Felix Weyer after the game against Bayern last weekend. The police investigation for defamation is ongoing. You okay with that, Jules?
Yeah. I think we knew that it was going to be something. He was going to get something. The fine is fine with me. I think Felix Weyer wants to meet with him. I'm not sure that's a good idea. Certainly not for now.
Why? You think what you're going to do? Physically attack?
I don't know. But like what? Try to educate him about what happened, or tell him the story of how he accepted some money to fix a game before? I don't understand why
maybe
you would want to
tell
speak
the full
to Jude Bellingham.
Maybe he can put his side of the story across and say, listen, made a mistake when I was young, just like you made a mistake now that you are young, and this is what happened. And
I think everybody should move on from this story. That's it. Atalanta Villarreal was a straight playoff for a place in the last 16, Gab, but heavy snow meant that it had to be postponed, and we played 9 a few hours on Thursday evening. That was the correct decision, right, by Anthony Taylor, the English referee?
It was a correct decision. Probably he delayed it for 20 minutes and it kept snowing and he stopped. Although, of course, typical thing, right? The minute that he says, okay, it's off, then it stops snowing. They probably could have played last night. Big debate about the kickoff time. They're playing it at 7 o'clock to allow people to get there. There's still obviously clash with the Europa League, and that's why they couldn't do it later, broadcasting reasons. Hmm. Manchester United and Young Boys draw 1-1 as Ralf Rangnick basically plays all his reserves. Jules, they'd already won the group, so this game was meaningless. But I was interesting. I'm not criticizing, but I had a choice. Like, I was interested in what he would do. I thought he would play his starters so that they could develop chemistry.
Yeah.
Because his system requires a lot of work, and he does not have a lot of training sessions. Instead, he decided to play all the kids. He got to see Mata and Matic and, well, Matic isn't a kid, obviously.
No, Ilanga and Ahmad and all of that. No, I agree with you. I thought the same. And maybe they needed a rest. And
there's no right answer here, right?
No, exactly. I think they could all have done with the rest. And this was a tough game because I thought Young Boys played really well, especially in the second half, and created some chances. So did United. Mata had a big one too in the second half, and it was a great goal by Mason Greenwood. Good for him to start, to play a lot, and to score that goal. But yeah, I had mixed feelings too when I saw the lineup. Great night for the Savage family, of course. Robbie Savage commentating on it.
I knew you were going to go there.
But it's a lovely story. I would love my son to play on a game I'm commentating on or covering. I think it would be great. So well done to them. But I think you move on to more serious things now in the league, and you can expect all the big boys to be back.
Do you think Rangnick, I'm just curious, I'd love to know, maybe somebody out there in the United-osphere knows this. I wouldn't be surprised if Rangnick just ran normal training sessions with his starters and then just showed up at the stadium.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised too. I'm sure that those starters didn't have a day off, that's for sure.
Exactly.
So, yeah. And sticking with United, Gab, Rangnick has brought in former US international Chris Armas and sports psychologist Sasha Lenz to his staff. He says that sports psychologists are important at the club.
Yeah, so what? So Chris Armas, obviously, previously at Toronto. He'd worked with him when Chris was at New York Red Bull, I think. I mentioned the psychologist thing because this is one thing that always I find this humorous, right? every so often you hear about an athlete who uses sports psychologist, and you get somebody, usually not somebody who covers sport, usually somebody stupid and easily impressed, and they're like, sports psychology, it's the wave of the future, everybody should be doing this, you're mad to, you know, not to do it. And I'm like, Brazil had a sports psychologist at the 1970 World Cup, right?
Yeah.
This is 50 years ago. This is not new. Something new.
No.
It's something that's come on and off for many, many years. Rangnick said that in Germany, most teams have one. And he talked about, you know, they exist because your brain is one of the most important muscles you use and whatever. If people get a benefit from it, fine. If people don't get a benefit, okay, whatever. It's up to them. If Rangnick feels it's necessary, you know, great. It's his decision. But please don't come back with this. Sports psychologists are so important. No, the importance is for some people, not in others.
Yeah.
You know, we'll
see. Some players will go and see him and spend a lot of time with him. Others will just laugh at the guy
in the weird suit and bad clothes. You know,
yeah, like, yeah.
I mean, also this dude, funny enough, as I learned, this guy's daughter is Timo Werner's. She's going to marry Timo Werner.
Fiancé,
yes, that's right. Fiancé, there's the word. It's a French word. That's why it didn't come to me.
Yeah, of course, great.
Lille beat Wolfsburg.
Captain.
And they topped their group. Jules, things turned out rather well for Gorvenek's boys, yeah?
Yes, Gab. They had 2 points after 3 games, 1 defeat, 2 draws, and they won their next 3 and in pretty impressive fashion at Sevilla against Wolfsburg, at Wolfsburg and against Salzburg at home. Being solid, being efficient. Jonathan David is a superstar. We've said it before. We absolutely love him on this show, and he was very good again. Same was Jonathan Ikone, who 2 days before the game was burgled. In his house, and then
he's moving soon anyway. So
yeah, probably to Fiorentina. But still, I think psychologically you have to be strong to go and play and do so well. Well done to them. I don't know who. Obviously, I think a lot of teams that finish second in their group in the Champions League would want to face them. And of course, they're the weakest side of the ones that finish top. But you know, I think it was a great achievement for Gorvenek and that team to top that group, even if it was an open group, and to finish the way they've done is great for the momentum.
On Jonathan David, a while back, our colleague Hercules Gomez suggested that he was the best CONCACAF striker in the world. Some doubts about Michael Antonio's eligibility, but dude does play for Jamaica, right?
Yes,
fair enough.
He's in the conversation.
Is Jonathan David, is he your number one?
Right now, he has to be. Great form.
Until Jimenez regains his mojo?
Maybe, but now it would be hard to knock JD.
JD, there you go.
Salzburg beat Sevilla 1-0 in what was another head-to-head playoff for the next round. That's impressive from Salzburg's young gun. But will Lopetegui be kicking himself? Surely. That's a group that Sevilla should top.
I think a little bit. I think when he looks over the 4 teams in his group, right? Wolfsburg with problems, Salzburg with a bunch of kids, Lille starting so badly. I think, but I think to me, this speaks to the fact that it's really hard and taxing for a club like Sevilla with the squad they have to compete on both fronts. You know, they're second in La Liga for a reason. So I think you can, to some degree, give them a pass on that, but I sure love for Salzburg because these teenagers, incredible. Okafor, the more I see him,
He hurt your Italy.
He certainly hurt Italy. But this guy's ridiculously good. I know he's not even the highest rated forward on that team. But he's really, really good.
Yeah, he's really good.
Kudos to Benfica, who advanced from the group after beating Dinamo Kiev 2-0. Jules, it's the best way to bounce back after the defeat in the derby against Sporting, no?
Yeah, of course. And Jorge Jesus was under so much pressure. I think he could really feel it. And that would bring some fans more on his sides. I think that the league title is too far ahead now with Porto and Sporting being so clear ahead.
Isn't it 4 points?
Is it that 4? Negative? I thought it was more than that.
Right, I could
maybe,
be wrong.
Maybe. If it's only 4, then they can come back. But at least this is important financially as well for a club that has a lot of issues and tension off the field too, to be able to be amongst the 16 best teams in Europe. And they certainly deserve it. Their big win against Barcelona was the difference, of course. And well done to Yaremchuk, who scored his only goal so far in the competition at the right time against his former team. So well done to them. Sheriff had already qualified for the Europa League, but Gab, still fitting that they should grab a point with a last-minute equaliser against Shakhtar, who were very disappointing in this campaign.
Yeah, my man Roberto De Zerbi, not quite coming through. But look, it's all about the Sheriff, man.
It's all about the Sheriff.
This is 93rd minute, Nikolov.
Amazing.
it shows, like I said, there's a lot of dark aspects to their story and their mm-hmm. rise. But then you look at these players and you see that the difference between highly paid superstars and, you know, some dude from Luxembourg, some guy from the Colombian second division, some dude yeah. who they found at the bus station, really isn't that big. They've been fantastic. It's been yeah. a joy.
Amazing.
Tottenham's crucial game against Rennes in the Europa Conference League has been postponed after COVID outbreak at Spurs left Antonio Conte with just 11 fit players. Jules, he was angry and frustrated. I've seen thousands, maybe not thousands, but many, many Antonio Conte press conferences. Yeah. This is about as angry. I thought he yeah. was going to start crying and raging at the same
just
time.
Just think, like, there's nothing going his way since he joined the club. I mean, result-wise, it's been a bit better. But this is another one where he thinks, okay, we can be on a roll now, we can be good. And now this happens. He said that he started training with 11 players available. And then by the end of training, one of those 11 had tested positive. Yeah. He said, this is scary.
So his frustrating thing is, obviously, these guys are tested daily, right? Mm. But what happens is, and I mean, in case you didn't know this, it's not like when you get infected, you immediately test positive. There's an incubation
yes,
period,
of course.
Right? And so even though they test every day and they mix every day, you don't know if you're mixing with people who've been infected but simply exactly. haven't turned up positive. And he says, where's it tomorrow?
Really
is it me? Is it
manage?
Me?
Yeah, I mean, no, it must be really hard to manage. One minute you're negative, the next minute you're positive, and it's just the way it happens.
I feel for him. I mean, in this country, because of the way the laws are, we don't know who's vaccinated, who's not vaccinated, yeah, and so yeah, on. They yeah. haven't had those debates that they've had elsewhere. But you do realize the stress it puts on other players and the risk, you know, some of these choices are you know, the risks that are involved and how they affect other people.
And the thing is, Rennes had already arrived in London. They were at the hotel. Then they were told by Spurs the game is off, but not by UEFA. So they said, hang on, what do you mean? You're not deciding if the game is on
yeah,
or off.
Yeah, I like this. This is so typically English. Spurs just tweet out, the game is off. Like, what?
Yeah. So then Rennes are like, what are we doing? Then Rennes put out a statement saying, we don't agree with the calling off of the game, postponement of the game. We're waiting on UEFA to decide. And UEFA, I think, are a bit in chaos. And then there's reports that the game is back on Thursday morning. Then it's off again. It's crazy. And then finally, it's off. Not sure when they're going to play it, probably at the end of December. The rule, which I didn't know, Gab, which makes a lot of sense, but I just didn't know the technicality of it, is that all group stages game of a Champions League, Europa League campaign, Conference Europa League, have to play before 31st of December. So you can't, for example, play this game, I don't know, beginning of January or yeah. end of January, even if the next round is only in February.
So you can have the draw and kind of just write
exactly.
Team A or Team B, although yeah. even that's going to be a nightmare in terms of scheduling, in terms of, because obviously Spurs, I mean, I guess it's a conference league, so there are no other English clubs, but you got to take those things into account as well.
Completely, completely. Sticking with COVID, Leicester's game away to Napoli will go ahead in a few hours on Thursday night, but again, 7 players are out of the Leicester squad due to COVID.
Yeah, and this is a group where, by the way, all 4 teams can still qualify.
Yeah, it's a great group.
Fortunately for Leicester, they have a big squad, although obviously they've had a lot of injuries this year. Mm. But yeah, it's not what Leicester wanted, and I think the Europa League for Leicester really important to them because, you know, they were maybe hoping that they could be outsiders for a top 4 finish in the Premier League. Certainly re-qualify for the Europa League this year. Things haven't gone according to plan. They've been up and down. They've had injuries. It's you know, the performances haven't been to the level that you or I would have expected this season. Not entirely Rodgers' fault. And
on top of that,
you get this as well. This is a major blow.
It is.
The French league handed out their punishment for events in the Lyon-Marseille match last month, which was abandoned after Dimitri Payet was struck by a bottle. It's a 1-point penalty, 3 games behind closed doors, and the match will be replayed. Does this sound fair to you, Jules? Because I saw the Marseille press guy going on a rant before they even...
So no one
before he even know what the verdict was.
Yeah, no one is happy, Gab. Marseille are not happy because they felt disrespected by the discipline commission that we have in France for basically, to make it quick, not getting them involved into the whole conversation. It was a weird one. So he went mad even before the sanction. Then after the sanction, Lyon went mad because they're not happy. They think it's too harsh. I think it's too soft again. It's too soft again, Gab. Don't replay the game. The game, 4 minutes in, I don't care. 1 minute in, 10 seconds in, one of your fans does this, you lose the game. You lose the game, and trust me, they won't do it again. Okay, so 1 point, they lost 1 point, which is not great because they were already not in good shape in the league, Lyon. But for me, it's too soft. And it will happen again. I guarantee you it will happen again.
No, I'm holding Peter Bosz personally responsible.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. Luis Suarez was substituted early in the Porto v Atletico game with a muscular injury and will now be out for a while, which means Gabi will miss, for example, the derby on Sunday. Mm. He was crying, leaving the pitch and sitting on the bench.
Look, I'm not cold and heartless, but I also think, can you imagine if Luis Suarez had been at the end and been on the pitch at the end of the game when it was all kicking off and everything.
Oh, he would have loved it.
Look, it's a big blow for Atleti heading into the derby, but
is it? He hasn't been in great form lately. I think he's one goal in
some ways. He might actually help them. Look, he'll be fine later. I think of all the people in the world, this is one person who it's more difficult for me, obviously, to have that much sympathy. Yeah. I have sympathy. He's injured. But, you know,
I see what
between
you
the biting and the dodgy Italian lessons and, you know, and Evra.
Yeah.
The laundry list is long. There's a lot of people come ahead of him in my view anyway. Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah. Aminata Diallo and Kira Amraoui are back training together for Paris Saint-Germain. Jules, the police investigation rumbles on, but we are no further forward.
No, the police are not saying much, to be fair. I'm trying to get information for you. I know you're very keen on this story. A lot of people are. They're continuing their thing. The Abidal link, of course. Abidal's wife and her family link, all of that.
Threatening phone calls made to the players before.
Exactly that. But I think for PSG's point of view, and the players, of course, the most important was to be back at training. They had a meeting before with the two players. Say, listen, can you be in the same dressing room again? Do you have resentment towards each other? And they said, no. We were friends before. We can play together. We want to stay at the club. We want to start playing and training again, which is really good. So let's see when they can play again, and let's see what the police is saying. But I think it would be very good for everyone to see them back together on the pitch with PSG.
I think. To me, what I find remarkable about this story is there's obviously still so many things that we don't know.
Yeah.
One thing that's surprising, which you probably already knew, is the penalty for her attackers, if they ever catch them, is up to 5 years in prison. This is something very, very serious.
Of course it is, yeah. They could have killed, they aimed at the legs, but they could have killed her potentially or just ruined the career forever.
I think a lot of people jump to a lot of conclusions very, very early. And I think that's what I think people need to go and review, right? We've had a lot of stupid speculation at the beginning that it had to do with competition for a place, and that it had to do with Abidal somehow and Abidal's wife, and then that Diallo was unfairly taken in, but then there's the other story where he's moving slow. I mean, let's all leave the speculation on one side.
Yeah.
Let's let the investigation run its course, and then we can draw conclusions.
Sampdoria owner Massimo Ferrero has been arrested for a bunch of alleged financial crimes, Gab, and has stepped down as club president. Needless to say, that Sampdoria fans deserve better.
Yeah, I mean, you can Google this guy, and the minute you see what he looks like, you realize this person should never have been allowed to buy a football club. And this is a fault of the Italian league and oversight that you find yourself in this position. Now,
for a long time as well.
But it's so obvious it was heading in this direction. It was so obvious from the moment the guy showed up.
Yeah.
And, you know, between Claudio Lotito owning two clubs in the league and that mess, I look at the Italian FA and I say, no, but you know what the Italian FA would say and the Italian League would say? They would say, it's not our fault. So you know whose fault it is? No, it's the lawyer's fault.
Of course.
Because we have a legal system where all these people, if they don't like the sporting rules, if they don't like what sporting justice says, they take you to civil court. All the freaking time. And because we have the most diabolically slow legal system in the history of man, these cases never get resolved. On top of that, you know my thoughts on lawyers.
Of course I do.
Not all of them, but most of them are vermin. And this is what happens. And who's going to pay? Who pays for all this illegality? Sampdoria fans, Sampdoria sponsors, people who in good faith went and did business with the club.
Yeah.
You know, they've been up for sale for a long, long time. Genoa, another one with another owner cut from the same cloth.
Yeah.
They've been sold. I hope Sampdoria get new owners soon. Marcelo Gallardo has announced he's staying at River Plate. Jules, I guess this means he won't get linked with every hipster job opening out there at least another 6 months or so. Instead of waiting for Godot, we're waiting for Gallardo.
I know. No, good for him if that's the call he made, the decision that he took, him and his family to stay. He's built something very special there at River, and he can have another go at the league title, at the Libertadores, all of that. But we've said, Marcelo, we said last time on the show, we said we would love you to come over to Europe. It's your time now. You've learned so much and your reputation is there. Even go to MLS. I mean, try something a bit different. But River is big. It's a big club. He wants to stay at least one more year. So be it. You know, we just
have best coach in the world who's never, ever worked in Europe. It's either him or it's Chichi, right?
Yeah.
Who do you go with?
Gallardo, because PSG status.
Of course.
Kurt Zouma will miss the next 2 months for West Ham. Gab, it's a big blow, especially with Angelo Ogbonna also out for a long time. Does David Moyes have to go and find another centre-back to make a big push for the top four?
So my first instinct was, yeah, of course. You need to strengthen back there because this is your big chance. You know.
So you've got Diop and Dawson, the two left really now.
Yeah.
Mice can play there, but.
And he can do a big, he's done a back three sometimes with Cresswell and the other two. So on paper, I would say, yeah, absolutely. Because it's not often that, you know, if you're West Ham, it's not often that you're going to get a chance to really go keep your status in top four. But then I looked at it and I said, look, if we trust the doctors that it is 2 months, then we're talking end of January that he's back, right? So maybe you can fudge it. You know, maybe you bring somebody in at a lower level. So you don't need to replace Avenging Angelo and Kurt Zouma. You just need another body in there in the rotation. Yeah. And then he comes back and you can fudge it. Because they've got such a nice, neat balance in this team. You just don't want to destabilize anything.
That's true.
And look, if Declan Rice is to play in a back three, Declan Rice can play in the back three. You have my man Suchik there anyway.
Yeah.
Pelé is in hospital for treatment on a colon tumor. Jules, early indications are positive, but obviously we're sending strength and love nonetheless.
Loads of love to El Rey Pelé, who, remember, went to hospital as well in September to get treatment. I think this is another part of that treatment, but he should only be there for a few days, the hospital said, and that he should go home, be home for Christmas. And we wish him speedy recovery and that everything is okay, we hope.
80 years young.
81, yeah, I think.
81.
Yeah, Chelsea and Juventus played a 0-0 draw in the Women's Champions League. But Gab, Sam Kerr went viral for actions towards a pitch invader.
Yeah, so, by the way, scheduling, you play this game, same time as the Champions.
That's what they've been doing, yeah.
That's fine. And obviously it takes something like this for us to talk about it, but, you know, that's fine. We don't cover women's football. But this is pretty remarkable. So they're playing. This dude walks onto the pitch. He's got his phone out. And it's not, you know, normally you see a pitch invader, you know, you're running on, the stewards run after him. No, he's wandering around for what feels like an eternity. He's got his phone out. He's turning this whole thing into a mockery. And so Sam Kerr goes up and just takes a little run up, blindsides him, body checks him to the ground. And yeah, I don't condone
violence.
Well
done, Sam. Big time.
Yeah, I would cheer this on. It's a question of safety for the players. Maybe of not course. The not a smart thing for Sam Kerr to do. Because for the next thing you know, maybe the guy gets up and pulls a knife and you know and whatever.
No, I know, but
or she could have got
someone had to do something.
Because you can see the stewards running. I don't know if there are other people, right? But you've got one dude who's like twice as big as me. He's the size of a house, waddling out there. The other one is a woman with blonde hair, looks like somebody's mom. And this is all the security you have for a women's game. Incidentally, she was booked. Technically speaking, based on the rules, she should have been sent off. I'm glad the referee did not send her off. Right, that brings us to an end. But Jules, we got to come back on Monday and do this all over again.
Oh, yeah.
Huge weekend coming up across Europe and the Champions League draw on Monday. Yeah. Also, remember, look out. Gab and Jules meets our new spinoff. Lots of good stuff and hopefully lots of interesting guests coming up as well. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.